When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Mr. Brian Reese.
Hey, that's me. How's it going?
It's going good. A little bit of a delay again. That's my fault. I've had issues in getting things. We've had issues getting together to actually record recently. So I had made a promise 2 episodes ago that we're going to get everything out on time this year. That failed in the first month.
It's how we roll. It's almost as if we have other lives.
Yeah, it's almost like that. But anyway, today on the program, we will be discussing a good one. Well, not a good one, but an interesting comic for us to discuss, right? It falls into the infamous category. It is 2017's Secret Empire.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. Written by Nick Spencer, of course, with art by, I don't know, everybody. But we'll get into it. First, before we do that, something major is happening in the comics world that I have no idea how it's going to affect how we read our comics, Brian. And that is the fact that Diamond Distributors is going bankrupt. The fallout from this is yet to be determined.
But reverberating quite a bit.
Oh, it is reverberating for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there have been long discussions for 20, 30 years about having a monopoly on comic book distribution. And I know there was in the 80s, Marvel had some issues. They started a separate distribution company. We're not going to go into the history of all of this.
In our back catalog, we actually did, it was during lockdown when Diamond was having issues.
Oh, right.
That we talked about a little bit about the history. So if you want to know more about the history of Diamond Comics, go somewhere else who talk to people who know what they're talking about. But if you want to hear our take on it, there's an episode back some. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, because of the lockdown, and we probably discussed that, I mean, obviously Lunar distribution kind of came through, and that was DCBS, which I have to be honest, I was using for a good while.
Yeah. Well, apparently Image is going to Lunar as well.
Right.
Or already and, has. Yeah.
You know, DCBS was kind of great. It's like I was on the once a month program, so I'd get a nice big box of comics, and how exciting is that? Although I did miss the Wednesday Warrior aspect of comic book buying. Yeah, so Lunar kind of stepped in and took over DC and a bunch of other publishers. Then Penguin Random House stepped in, took over the Marvel distribution. Although Diamond was still funneling some of those. It's complicated.
It is complicated.
I don't run a comic book shop because everything in the past 4 years sounds like a nightmare for the buyers at the comic book shops.
Right. I have been just perusing YouTube of various comic book shop owners making videos about their nightmare experiences and, you know, shipments not showing up, shipments showing up wrong, shipments showing up with comics battered and bent.
Poorly packed.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just been horrible for a while. There is talk of Penguin perhaps buying Diamond.
Yeah, so Diamond is in, I have notes, so apologize if I sound robotic when I'm reading off, because there's a lot going on. There's a distributor's auction, like, on the 24th of March. There are also, like, 30 interested parties in buying Diamond. This is just the, I'm not going to list those.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that many. I thought it was just a handful, but.
Yeah, so there are numerous, there's so many things going on. I mean, Diamond has to clear bankruptcy, but they're having to put their financials out. And then you have creditors who are coming after Diamond. And Diamond, in turn, is coming after, like, small comic book shops that still owe them money.
And those comic book shops are, for what we just talked about, saying, I'm not paying you anything because you sent me garbage.
Right.
So that's a whole thing.
And so, you know, Diamond is going to start sending creditors to small comic book shops who can't afford to have this happen. Meanwhile, Diamond's creditors are going after Diamond. The whole thing is a fustercluck. And comic book shops have been reporting for months now, because Diamond shut down one of their major distributors in Pennsylvania, one of their major warehouses. And so people are not getting their comic books on time, like not even close.
I know. And if you don't get your comic books on time, you don't get the money, you can't pay. It's a whole cycle, and it's bad juju, as they say.
Yeah, and it's just we've already seen like some reports, like both IDW and Dark Horse have done massive layoffs
Yeah, I read that.
recently. Now, whether this is cause and effect, I think there is a little bit of effect from the cause. It's probably also other issues as well, but we know of at least one, maybe two. I think Blood Moon has ceased publishing their comics.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
And Blood Moon is a small
Yeah.
publisher, mostly in horror comics. I don't really read anything from Blood Moon, but I'm aware of them. And it's a small publisher with a niche audience who apparently have pleased that small portion of comic book readers who enjoy that. And
I pick up stuff from them every once in a while. I can't say that I'm an avid reader, but every once in a while a title will catch my fancy, strike my fancy. What do you do to your fancy?
well, that's none of my business. That's an individual choice.
Whatever
So,
floats your fancy.
yes. But, this is going to affect Free Comic Book Day. Already, we've seen reports of people pulling their Free Comic Book Day titles from Diamond. Lunar and Penguin Random House are seemingly unwilling to take on, like, the small publishers like Blood Moon. Or what is it? American? Who's the one that does? They do the Three Stooges comics and some of the reprints of like Underdog and
Oh yeah, what are they called?
American Anthology. I'm not getting the name right, but I think they're in trouble. And so because they're not being picked up by Lunar or Penguin Random House, so you're gonna see a lot of comic publishers go under. The
Yeah.
ones who service smaller markets.
Yeah, just trying to get by, basically.
Right. And so, where does that lead us? It leads us to, Marvel DC Image.
Which is getting close to a trinity, not necessarily a monopoly.
And I'm a fan of all three companies. I'm a fan of many of the comics that all three companies put out. But I'm also a fan of Fantagraphics. I'm a fan of Boom. I'm a fan of IDW has been putting out maybe the best run of Star Trek comics that's ever existed. And so, what's going to happen to all of these because we allowed one company to be a monopoly, and that company has, by all accounts, by reading comic book shop owners, ignored all of their complaints and concerns over 30, 40 years.
Hopefully this will get worked out. There might be direct sales at this point,
Right.
which would really hurt local comic book shops,
Would, yeah.
d deeply hurt them. It'll get worked out in time, but unfortunately, a lot of people are going to hurt because of this.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to lose money. A lot of people who can't afford to lose money are going to lose money.
And I saw someone posting, it's not just local comic book stores which are at the forefront of who are going to be hurt. It's all these comic creators who have done everything they're supposed to do, working their way up in the industry, and they finally get a comic book put out by like Devil Moon, or I'm sorry, Blood Moon, or Ahoy, or Ablaze, or
I've been reading stuff from Mad Cave recently, and
Mad
that's,
Cave. I
yeah.
think Mad Cave and Massive are kind of collapsing in together to try to like create a larger group that will get some distribution through Lunar. But it's the creators who have worked really hard to bring themselves up into a they work their way through self-published comics into smaller publishers, into medium publishers, and now all of the work that they've done is going to get shut down because all the work they did to get up to like mid-level comic book publishers, those publishers are gonna shut down, and their names aren't Gail Simone. So they're right, and this isn't a dig on. We love Gail Simone is our saint,
Yeah,
and
if you're not, if not already established.
right, Gail Simone knows this, and I think she's showing on her socials a great concern for all of this too.
Absolutely.
But if you're not Scott Snyder or Gail Simone or Ryan North or Jed McKay, you know, where do you go? It's just very...
People are going to suffer because one person or one group screwed up.
And to me, the biggest loss personally is previews. They're still making previews, but previews has been... I don't know if you're a previews guy, Paul. We've never really talked about it.
Not as much as you, apparently.
Yeah. Previews has been one of my favorite things for as long as I can remember. You get your big, thick, giant 600-page tome, and you spend an evening, like what I would do is I would spend an evening with a pen and Post-its, and I would go through previews, circling comics I wanted to order for, you know, my box at my local or to order from DCBS or however I was getting my comics. Is that sad?
No, not at all.
No, but it gave me enjoyment. And I ordered so many independent comics because of previews that I would never, ever, ever have known about if it weren't for that catalog.
No, it's great. It's great. I don't have the same ritual as you do. It reminds me, though, I don't know if you did this as a kid, you got the Sears catalog.
Yes.
And around Christmas, and you go to the toy section and just like, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one.
That was every kid, like at least in our generation and generations before us, the Sears and JCPenney catalog
too. And JCPenney, yes.
But the Sears was the big one, right? You would go through that catalog and mark what you wanted.
Yeah, you head to your parents and say, get this to Santa, stat. Yeah, so I totally understand where you're coming from. And that's actually a great way of doing things. I mean, to be aware of stuff that you normally would. I mean, yes, I keep up with the solicitations from Marvel and DC and Image. So I know what's happening with them. But a lot of the indies, I don't really know it's happening until it's happening.
Yeah, and you can do some of this online. I mean, again, not to pimp DCBS, but, you know, their pre-order tab every, I don't know, fifth or sixth day of the month when they finally get all that stuff. You can go through basically all the publishers, but you're looking at computer screens. It's not the same.
No, it's nice to have that big old doorstop in front of you.
That big old tree killer. But it was on the other great thing about previews, it was on the old school newsprint. So there was a tactile feel to it that you didn't get with comics now because of the change in paper and whatever, but you get that newsprint and it's, I don't know. This is serious nostalgia time here, but.
You know, the fallout from this Diamond stuff, we don't know what's going to happen, but there's going to be some big changes. And unfortunately, I think some people are going to either go out of business or be in some dire straits for a little while until somebody figures this crap out. But let's talk about one of the most famous creators in comic book history. Okay. Before I begin, I'm going to be all over the board of how I talk about this, and I don't want to offend anybody. I'm going to be using a lot of names and genders because I don't know.
Well, we don't have to talk about it long. I really just want to give a congratulatory shout out for the most part.
Yeah. So Toni Isabella has announced that she is transitioning into Jenny Blake Isabella. So
at 73.
Transitioning.
Good for them.
I know. It's fantastic. It really is. I mean, and I went to their Facebook page, and they have a wonderful, just the announcement. There's somebody, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there's a few things in there. So she says, my preferred name is Jenny Blake Isabella. I've always liked the name Jenny. Blake comes from Marvel's Dr. Don. Once a Marvel maniac, always a Marvel maniac. She says, I don't consider Toni Isabella to be a dead name. I've written a lot of good stories and other things under that name, and I've done a lot of good for people. I plan to continue writing under that name and my preferred name. And then she goes on to say that DC Comics has asked if they want to change all the back, you know, all the trades going forward and back issues and so forth, which is cool. Good for DC. Yeah.
Well done, DC.
Yeah, and apparently they will be writing under both names, depending on the project.
And I believe the convention appearances, because they were already scheduled with literature already printed with the previous name, will go forward with the Toni.
Right. At 73.
Yeah.
Going through this. I mean, good on him, because, you know, just be happy. Be who you are. You know, I know there's going to be a certain segment of the population who will get angry about this. And
what? In comic fandom?
I know. But you know what? We all learned to call Christopher Priest Christopher Priest.
Yeah.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby aren't their real names either.
No.
So, you know, so we should be okay with transitioning our mindset. How's that?
Jenny Blake Isabel is not remotely close to the first comic creator who has transitioned. There are many more out there. I'm not going to go into a long list, but we know some of them, Leah Sturgis, Ming Doyle, a few others. She created Black Lightning, one of the most important, I think, regardless of how one feels about how Black Lightning has been written by various artists or whatever, Black Lightning was a massively important character introduced at a time in which representation was not fantastic. So, this is a really important comic book creator. And so I'm really happy for them, and I wish them her the best of luck and enjoyment of their life going forward as they become the person that they have always wanted to be.
Yes. And that's, I mean, and it just says it's never too late to be who you are. And, yeah.
And don't let current social trends or political trends stand in your way.
Exactly. And that's actually a good transition.
Speaking of which.
Yeah, so that's a good transition into the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some political machinations.
It's.
Yay, let's take a break.
And we are back. Paul, we're talking about your recommendation today. And my goodness, good gravy, heavens to Murgatroyd, you have picked a humdinger. I am very curious to hear what you have to say about it, leading us into the discussion.
Fandom is a fickle thing. Being a fan of a particular franchise or character can bring immense joy and happiness to your life. It can give you a lifetime of entertainment and an opportunity to connect with others who feel the same way you do. On the flip side of that coin, fandom can bring a sense of entitlement, a feeling of ownership that can lead one to feel betrayed when something doesn't fit neatly into that preconceived idea you have created in your mind. And it can lead you to lash out and to alienate others from experiencing that same joy and happiness that brought you to the fandom in the first place. As fans, we walk a fine line between adoration and condemnation. Now, if you've listened to this show before, it is no secret that I am a fan of Captain America. Cap has been my favorite character since I was 6 years old. The character has not only entertained me, but inspired me. Captain America is the embodiment of self-sacrifice and service. His symbol is a shield, a form of defense and protection. Captain America places himself in front of danger and protects those who are in need, regardless of their persuasion. And he does this not for reward, but because it's the right thing to do. This is why, in 2017, when Nick Spencer wrote the crossover event Secret Empire, in which Captain America is revealed to be a sleeper Hydra agent and initiates a fascist takeover of the United States, I was pissed off. How dare he? How dare he do this to my character? And I was not shy in my condemnation of this storyline. I was enraged at the impugning of the reputation of my beloved captain. I was indignant. I was inconsolable. And in hindsight, I suppose I was a bit insufferable. But time has passed. Things have changed. And fandom is now polarized in ways I could never have imagined. So much so that my views on my own fandom have reversed. I've learned to give up my entitlement and my ownership of things that never belonged to me in the first place, and simply try to enjoy the thing for what it is. So with that in mind, it was time to revisit Secret Empire and judge it on its own merits, not weighed down by the baggage I brought to it. And I found out that it's okay. Secret Empire is an action-packed political thriller with superhero overtones. It tells an alternate universe story of a USA that gives in to its baser instincts, one that commits evil in the guise of doing good, And there are elements of this story that, seen in the political landscape of 2025, seem downright prescient. It has its flaws. It's a crossover event, of course it does. Sometimes the characters act in ways that are expedient to the plot rather than what is naturalistic for that character. Sometimes events unfold in ways that are a bit too convenient. But these are flaws of all crossovers and not inherent to Secret Empire. Overall, though, it's a good story. Not one of my favorites, but good. Nick Spencer is a fine writer. He spins a good yarn. And Secret Empire is exciting. It's funny. It has a few punch-the-air moments. And I would never have seen this with the veil of fandom pulled over my eyes. Fandom is a fickle thing. And I continue to walk that fine line, but I have found that to be a fan of something is to let fandom go and judge a thing for what it is rather than what you think it should be. Brian, what did you think of Secret Empire?
So I have a million caveats before we get into this, some of which I warned you about before we started. Paul and I do try to not talk too much about the comics we're covering beforehand because we want to allow a more organic discussion.
We don't want to ruin the content, people.
Right. The content is the most important thing, not the conversation beforehand.
Exactly.
So, first of all, listening to your intro, it reminded me of the dead horse I've been beating over and over and over again for years of the treatment of one of my favorite characters, which is Beast. And so we're not going to get into a discussion of Beast, but you talking about how you have a specific view as a fan of Captain America and the umbrage that you took with that character being treated in a way that you don't like reflects for me in many ways how I have felt about Beast and how they altered the character of Beast in recent years in a way that makes me as a comic book fanboy angry. So I'm only using that as a springboard to get us back to, so I understand your concerns about Captain America in a way that I think is mirrored. So we're pulling aside. So what I'm saying is that I understand. Some of my feelings will be reflected as we discuss Steve Rogers, Captain America, going forward in this discussion. And so to get to the comic book Secret Empire, the other caveat is I have no idea who half of these people are. This was a period of Marvel that I was not super invested in. I was, at this point in time, there was no Doctor Strange comic. So I was reading, maybe there was, I can't remember exactly. The only Marvel title I was probably seriously invested in at the time was Daredevil, which I could, you know, was the one constant throughout my readership of comics in general. I have to confess to being befuddled through a lot of this. And maybe I don't catch some nuances. I don't know who a lot of, like, it's Thor, but apparently it's Odin's son. I don't know anything about this.
Okay. Well, so I was reading Marvel avidly at this point, and Marvel tried so hard to make me stop reading. and not because, so this was at the all new, all different version where they were trying to bring in legacy characters, younger characters in combination with some of the older characters, which they had decided to do other things with.
Right.
You know, that we talked about Scarlet Witch recently, and they were trying to reinvent Scarlet Witch. Thor, at this point, this is when Jane Foster took over as Thor, which is a great run by Jason Aaron, by the way. Original Recipe Thor, had been found unworthy and could no longer lift the hammer.
Original Recipe.
So he was then called Odin's son. That's why in this comic he's known as Odin's son. A thing like Tony Stark is dead.
Right. You know,
I use air quotes. He's dead. And so in this comic, he's an AI manifestation because Tony's consciousness had been uploaded into a computer, which Riri Williams, who's Ironheart, it's all, it, you know,
It's all interconnected. And here's where some of the issues come into play. As me reading this, some of this event so strongly requires a knowledge of the current landscape of Marvel.
Right. Well, then there were also, so another key thing here is this is when, Marvel executives had it in their mind that Inhumans were going to be the new thing. And
Right.
they pushed the Inhumans hard.
Right.
Right.
And the Inhumans ended up being Fetch.
Right.
Fetch just wasn't going to happen.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, well, the only Inhuman that stuck was Ms. Marvel, because Kamala Khan is an awesome character.
Right.
And she's now being retconned into being a mutant. So she's that whole thing has gone by the wayside. But there's so many new Inhumans characters in this comic that really aren't a, they're still around, but it's not really
And one of the 20 Deus Ex Machinas that happen in this comic was a character named Mosaic. No clue.
Yeah, Mosaic
I have no
can
idea. I still don't. I probably should have Wikipedia'd, but I was like, if I just Wikipedia everything I don't know, I'm not actually going to read the comic book. I'm just going to spend time online.
Right. And Mosaic is it's not important. It's not important.
I have no, apparently that's an inhuman, and
Yes.
yeah.
Can mind control people and blah blah blah.
I
It's the
bring
same
all
thing
this.
with Hive. Hive is like there's so many characters that Inhumans that are basically DC characters. There's Hive who is in basically Starro.
I caught some of that in the, I saw a Starro moment, and I was like looking at it going, that's Starro.
Oh no, it's
Right,
Hive.
there's a few panels. It's just a few where, you got the thing stuck on people's faces. And I was like, wait, is this DC or Marvel?
Right. Well, there's a character called Boomerang who throws boomerangs and he goes and lives in Australia. And I was like, really? Come on, man. Try harder.
And Hyperion has always, well, Hyperion, and then none of this matters. I'm trying to lay the groundwork for my approach to discussing this comic is going to be skewed a little weird because I'm not catching some of the nuances of the Marvel Universe. But at the same time, I am catching the political intrigue, which I think is great
Which is
in the
what,
comic.
which is, yeah, which is what Nick Spencer excels at.
Yes. And so I didn't mean to make this a longer discussion than it should be. I apologize. I'm going to call Thor Thor. I'm not going to call him Odin's son. That doesn't fall naturally from my lips. But at the end of the day, I think this is a good 5 or 6 issue series
Yeah, with a lot of padding.
with a lot of padding that isn't necessarily decompressed. And I want to bring this up right off the bat too. There are moments where decompression happens, but when I'm taking notes on these issues, they're extensive. There is a lot, a whole lot that happens in this comic,
Well, yeah, I mean,
which is great for an old school reader like me.
I mean, you're getting your money's worth when you read these comics, for
I'm
sure.
getting my money's worth.
There are essentially three comics going on in each issue,
Yes.
because there's three storylines happening.
Right.
There's a space adventure, there's a kind of mystical dark world happening in New York, and then there's the main fascist takeover of the US.
But then it's all split up into the Red Room, into
Oh yeah.
the
The
Avengers. I mean, it's just
Mount. Yeah.
the mount. There is so much going on in this comic, which is great, but a lot of that could have been shaved off.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I mean, if you're going to do a crossover, it's good to have a whole bunch of stuff happening
Right.
so that there's a reason for these other comics to tie in. I will admit I did not read a lot of the crossover stuff. I mean, I read the Captain America tie-ins, which we get a couple of issues of
Right.
Captain America in this because they are essential to the
Right.
plot.
I read none of the crossovers that weren't in this trade.
I mean, at the time I had read some, but
I think there were Daredevil crossovers that I vaguely barely remember.
there were all kinds.
Reading Daredevil at the time, but I have no memory of those because I probably treated those as, oh, these are crossover tie-ins. So I didn't pay attention to them as canon at the time.
And that is the essentially, we've talked about this a million times. Crossovers just get in the way,
Yes.
to the point where after this Secret Empire, there was a hiatus for almost 2 years before they did a crossover again. Mm-hmm. And it was just like this wonderful, glorious time where the comics were just allowed to be comics. And they don't...
The writers were allowed to write their own stories without editorial. Well, writers never are without editorial interference. Right. But
yeah, without editorial mandates, I guess. So,
but we should actually get to the actual comic. I have some peripheral additions while we're talking about it involving speeches. So many speeches.
Well, it is essentially a Captain America comic, and Cap loves his speeches.
He does love his speeches.
Unfortunately, these speeches are fascist in nature, but...
Yeah, but other people join in on the long speeches, Sam Wilson.
There's we're going to get jump all the way to the end, I guess.
We're going to get to...
Yeah, but Sam Wilson, Falcon, does Falcon Captain America, Falcon yeah. America. He has a speech, but before he begins, he's like, I haven't been really good at this, but if I'm going to be Captain America, I have to give a speech. So he does caveat that. There's a lot of little, you know, little aside one-off jokes, which I appreciated. Like I forget who it was. Someone says, you know, we had an agreement and you broke it. And the person said, well, to be honest, I am a dishonest person. And
I think it may have been Scott Lang.
Right. Yeah, it was Scott Lang. Yeah. I mean, I'm a deeply a dishonest person. And then there's the character Puke.
Barf.
That's barf. What it is. Barf. And someone says, yeah, to be fair, all the good code names have been taken.
Yeah, and that was Tony Stark. yeah. And that's great. Barf is actually, well, we'll get to barf. We'll be barfing shortly.
Yeah, there's a barfing thing. So we're gonna not go beat for beat in this comic, but we are going to do some overall summary of this, just overall summaries.
It's 10 issues long, plus like a free comic book day and an episode or an issue zero, a free comic book day. There's an Omega, and then there's some peripheral stuff shoved into it too. 10 issues is a lot.
It is.
And then we add 4 or 5 more peripheral things, but let's talk about the comic.
Yep. Okay. So we begin with the overall setting up the storyline. Again, little peripheral or little backstory. I don't know if you are familiar with Kobik.
I wasn't until I read this.
Yeah. Kobik was is a character who is a physical manifestation of the cosmic cube. It's a little girl basically learning her powers. And in a previous storyline, Captain America, Steve Rogers is very, very, he comes back. He comes back from the dead as being very old. Yeah. Oh, there's so much.
There's a lot going on in this. A lot of which is useless. It doesn't matter.
But the idea is that the Red Skull gets Kobik, and Kobik tries to make him happy by making Captain America his ally. And so she rewrites reality.
Kobik, because she's presented as a little girl, bonds with the Red Skull.
Yes. And she tries to, she rewrites reality so that Captain America has always been a sleeper Hydra agent. Mm-hmm. So we begin the story. Cap is now the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and has done all these behind the scenes machinations to have a shield, a energy shield surrounding the Earth, which then blocks out anyone from getting in. He makes it so that all the cosmic, the really high powered cosmic characters are out in space.
Carol Danvers,
Nova, Quasar.
And Quasar, who I have no idea who that character is, but apparently is one of the most important characters.
Quasar is a ridiculously overpowered character. And to be fair, a character from the 70s who has, like Captain Marvel, has had several people take that mantle.
Yeah, and so I'm familiar with Quasar, but I wasn't familiar with this iteration.
Right, okay. Yeah, and then there's, think of all the cosmic high-powered characters are pushed out so that they're off the table, basically. And then sort of the street level, the New York contingent, the defenders, the champions. No, not the champions.
Yeah, but like you said, the street level.
And they're all blocked out because Defies is a way to have New York be, again, taken off the board by being put into a dark dimension. And then he announces himself
as... That's a really sad character that ends up doing that, we find out later.
Yeah, it's a character called Blackout.
There's a really sad moment involving them later, and we find out that they have been used badly.
Okay, we'll get into it, because Cloak and Dagger, what happens to Dagger is also sad.
Also pretty awful.
Yes, but, so this is the setup. Cap has been manipulating events so that he can get his the real powerful enemies off the board, and then announces himself as Hydra Supreme and uses a political act. So the U.S. has given him supreme power.
Right.
Basically, in the guise of, you know, we're going to give this to Captain America. We're going to give supreme power to Captain America because he's going to protect us. And then he announces, oh, now I'm Hydra. He makes the United States into a fascist haven, which is unthinkable. Could never happen. yes. Pause for.
Not reflecting 2025 at all. I do want to jump in here real quick. You're describing issue zero. And this issue zero is probably, along with issue four, my favorite of these issues.
It's good.
Issue zero is astonishing in its setup. This is really well-written comics because it's like so much happens and all the motivations are really well-written and you see essentially the complete disintegration, the way that you see Captain America going from what we expect of him, like going down further once he is given this supreme power. Because I didn't read the stuff coming up and didn't know he was Hydra, the idea of how he manipulates and uses all of these powers given to him freely.
Right.
And the way he coordinates. I mean, this is a movie.
Exactly.
Issue Zero is a movie.
So at the time, you know, like I said, my introduction, I was outraged by this because, you know, Nick Spencer just doesn't get the character. He doesn't understand Captain America. But reading it without that bias, he actually does.
Yeah.
Because one of the keys is that Captain America is an expert strategist and is always several steps ahead of people. And that's what he does.
Possibly the greatest strategist. I mean, right. He's the Batman of Marvel. I mean, some people say it's Daredevil, but it's really Steve Rogers is the Batman.
He's able to plan everything. That's why he's always the leader of a team, because he knows how to plan and strategize. And it's in an evil way, but he does what Captain America does, which is, and that's distressing.
But it's brilliantly plotted.
Yes,
all it is. Credit to Nick Spencer on this issue. It's political intrigue at its best. He really just. Construction of the story is so good in this issue as right. You see all the pieces fall into place, and he doesn't give it away. He gives it to you at the moment you need it to be given to you to follow. This is just one of the best single issues of an event comic I've read.
It's quite good. And there's several issues in here that are really well written. Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing is well written. Nick Spencer is a good writer. Let's just say that flat out. He's a good writer and he does good work. So yeah, so at the end of this comic, we find out Steve Rogers has taken full control. He has emergency powers to be the supreme leader of the United States. He then goes
willingly given to him.
Well, yes, it was handed to him by the people. He then goes on to shape the country into what he wants it to be. It's a fascist state.
It's Hydra.
It's Hydra. Yeah, he shapes it into Hydra.
Knows what Hydra is. We all know what Hydra is. It's like we don't. There's a lot of Hydra exposition about who they are that anybody listening to this knows exactly who Hydra is.
And then we get into we start setting up. There was some pushback, but it's all been quashed because Steve Rogers is too. He's too good of a strategist. He has all this planned.
He's Steve Rogers. He's brilliant.
Yeah, and he has everything. You know, he's squashed. He's either got people on his side. Or he's squashed all opposition. And he now begins to reshape the country into his fascist utopia. He has Inhumans submitting to registration and being put into camps. Interesting.
Yes.
The mutants have now set up their own little territory and claim to be independent. And a small... Wakanda has resisted. Atlantis has resisted. So there's different areas. But now we get into the MacGuffin chase. So there are fragments of the cosmic cube, which is Kovik, scattered around the world, I should say.
Yeah.
And the idea is that Captain America wants to, Steve Rogers, I'm going to call him Steve Rogers. Steve Rogers wants to get all of the fragments back together again so that he can rewrite reality into what he believes is what should have happened.
Right.
Which is that the Axis powers won World War II and Hydra now runs the world.
But now, because all we have right now is that Kobik rewrote Steve Rogers' history. They didn't write the entire history of the world.
Yes. The Hydra iteration of Steve Rogers believes that it's the opposite, that the Cosmic Cube overwrote what really happened and people believe that the Allies won.
Right.
But he wants to change it back to his reality. It gets into perception and how we perceive. Yeah.
There's some deep stuff going on here. There's some really interesting subtext.
There's good stuff in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's it. So that starts what will be the main focus of this crossover, which is we need to gather up these cosmic cube shards, and whoever gets it first will create reality to be what they want it to be.
We should note in these first few issues, Steve Rogers is still displaying a sort of moral center. He gets into conflict with some of the Hydra majordomos in that he doesn't want to kill people. He doesn't want to. He's still Steve Rogers.
In a way, yes.
One of the longstanding things throughout this is the disintegration of Steve Rogers' moral center till we get to the end when it's completely gone.
Exactly.
I think it is notable. I think one of the biggest story beats is when he has Rick Jones executed.
Yes, it's because it's a crossover event. You got to have Rick Jones in it. But Rick Jones has been captured. Cap keeps trying to get him to come to his side to hail Hydra, but Rick refuses, and he actually gets some information, some intel out into the world. And this is actually a character named Rayshon Lewis who gets the information and tries to take it to the Resistance, which is led by Tony Stark and Hawkeye and several others. The character Rayshon Lewis, by the way, will become Patriot in the future. So,
I did not know this.
Yes. He's just some kid in this, but he actually does become something. Yeah. He becomes an important character.
Who got the file that Rick Jones sent out?
And he gets it to, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
There is a hidden base.
We can't cover everything. We don't have 5 hours.
Yeah. There is a hidden base in a mountain with a whole bunch of resistance. What is left of the resistance? Led by Hawkeye, there's Ant-Man and Thing and Hercules. There's just a lot of...
A bunch of Marvel characters. Yeah.
Right. But the primaries are Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Tony Stark. So Tony gets a team together, gets an elite team together, and he heads off around the world to try to find the missing shards.
So the idea is that, like, because of Rick Jones's info that he got out, saying that Kobik has been shattered into multiple fragments, and the idea is, I mean, this is just a what's the type of story? It doesn't matter.
It's a fetch quest.
It's a fetch quest. So the next many issues are essentially just everybody like running around the world trying to get pieces of the Cosmic Cube shard, because if you get all the shards and rebuild Kobik, then you can alter the world as you need it to be altered.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of fetch quests going on. In the meantime, in the Dark Dimension over New York, characters that are caught there are trying desperately to fight off evil demons and keep hope alive. One of the main thing that happens in this is that Kingpin becomes benevolent.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he begins acting in an altruistic way in order to help people get the medicine, keep people safe.
Right.
But it's not altruistic. He's doing it so that people... This will lead to future storylines where Kingpin becomes mayor of New York. And
yes. And this... I know.
Yes.
Because Daredevil.
Yes, exactly.
But at the same time, this is consistent with Wilson Fisk's character. Notoriously throughout his run has been, as evil as he is, he has been always notoriously protective of his city. Now, some of that is not for altruistic reasons, but there is plenty of narrative evidence that Fisk will opt for good when it protects the city that he is from.
Well, he will hurt other cities and areas in order to practice on city. But
Wilson Fisk is not a good man.
No, he is not.
But this is not, all of this is not out of character for Wilson Fisk. Both in him using this to further himself, but at the same time, there is an underlying altruistic nature of like he protects his people so that his people will then worship him. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I can't think of a real world analogy at the moment
Something about eggs and bacon.
that we get brought across the Gulf of America. Anywho, there's this whole plot line going on in the dark dimension in over New York or within New York. And one of the things that stands out is that Dagger of Cloak and Dagger, who emits light, is placed on the tallest point in New York and is giving off light so that people have light and hope. It slowly kills her. And it's just it's so dark.
It's a through line.
Because you have Claire Temple, night nurse, who is giving her drugs to keep her going. And they know they're doing wrong. They're hurting someone. And this gets into a long, over and over. There's so many things in this comic where is it okay to do something bad to one person if it saves multiple lives? We get this through multiple characters trying to do this. In the previous crossover Civil War II, Miles Morales, Spider-Man, has a vision that he kills Captain America. And
And
he
this
has
is
this, yeah, and he
okay.
has this in his head. So he really believes that he's going to kill Captain America. And is it okay to do that if it saves people's lives? So there's a whole moral ambiguity running through this entire series.
And we see that played out, particularly at the end of the day, Black Widow and Maria Hill, probably the two most compromised outside of Steve Rogers, the Hydra Steve Rogers.
And again, they have their own motivations and they both believe that they're doing good, but they're the means to their ends is questionable. So we get to there's an event in Las Vegas because people some of the resistance is hiding out in Las Vegas. So Steve Rogers has an attack,
Bombs the living hell out
bombs a
of.
little of it, and many people die, many heroes die. And it's because of this that Black Widow gives up on trying to save Steve Rogers, and she says, I'm on my own. I'm going to assassinate him.
She's going against the rest of the rest of the resistance. She creates the Red Room.
Yes, well,
All the
because
teenagers follow Black Widow into the we're going to assassinate Steve Rogers.
and it's because Miles knows that he's the one who's supposed to kill him. So obviously he feels compelled to go on this mission. And
Which leads to many, many, many emo conversations between Miles Morales and Black Widow. I mean, there's like four or five long expositions between the two of them that could have been cut out
I don't mind them. I
to
don't
make
mind them.
this a shorter comic.
I don't mind those. I love Black Widow, and to see her getting emo is on brand. I think it's fine. And it's interesting to watch Miles Morales, who's so innocent and lighthearted as a character, really struggling with this idea of this is something, he has to kill, he really believes he has to kill Steve Rogers. And he does not want to, but he feels it's his destiny. Those conversations with Black Widow is basically him trying to get his head around it. Like, how do you do it? And Widow is just saying, I don't want to, but she has to.
Time, she's like, "Do you know who I am? I was an assassin."
But he's kind of saying, and this gets into, again, we're going to get a little bit ahead. Widow keeps trying to say, I'm trying to teach you kids how you survive, and I'm going to teach you. And she's trying to instill in them, do whatever it takes at any cost. And Miles at one point says, but what if you're wrong? And what if doing what you do just makes things worse? And that's really compelling. I think it is anyway. To see it's the Miles Morales Peter Parker attitude of, great power, great responsibility. And it's great. I like that. So moving on. We now have Tony Stark's crew going out to find the Cosmic Cube shards, and they meet up with Sam Wilson, who
By the
is
way, I'm referring to them as the Cosmic Questers.
sweet Cosmic Questers. I like it.
They haven't been referred to that in the comic, but so I put a trademark in my notes next to the comic Cosmic
Cosmic
Questers.
Questers. Yeah, you didn't want to go with the Cubists.
The cu well, Cubist would have been it's a
Let's go with Cosmic Questers. I like it. So the Cosmic Questers, they meet up with Sam Wilson, who is a little despondent, but he's been working on the border trying to get he's trying to smuggle people out of the country. he is really taking Steve Rogers being Hydra to heart, and it's broken him.
He's having sads.
Yes, and he is trying to do his part by running an underground railroad, basically, and getting people out of the country.
So he essentially acquiesces and helps the Cosmic Questers get out of the country to start looking for the Cosmic Cube fragments.
And after a few failed attempts in various locations of trying to get shards of the Cosmic Cube, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit if that's okay. I don't want to go into every single.
I think we need to. We can't cover every issue here. This is not a 5-hour podcast.
Exactly. So we get to one of my favorite issues. Actually, I don't know if you agree with me. They find out that Hank Pym has melded with Ultron and built a city in Alaska. And both Steve Rogers, Hydra agents, and the Cosmic Questers try to infiltrate Ultron's lair because he has a shard of the cube. And they end up having an Avengers dinner. What do you think of this?
This is probably my favorite issue.
It's good.
And what is interesting to me about this issue is that this is absolutely one of the most meta comics I've ever read that occurs during an event issue. Not the whole issue. There's other stuff that happens. The idea is both Hydra and the Cosmic Questers are converging on Hank Pym / Ultron, and Ultron is happy to receive both of them. He has a shard, and he is more than happy to have them for dinner. And that leads to one of the most, I can't believe Marvel let this scene play out.
Well, it lays.
It is an absolute meta takedown of the past 40 years of Marvel Comics.
Specifically crossovers, too.
Specifically crossovers.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to point out that the art in this where Hank Pym's face has been, half of it has been grafted over Ultron's head, which is a little bit of body horror there. So is now a good time to talk about the art?
Sure.
Let's just do a quick aside. The art's weird. There's a lot of different artists working on it.
Right. Which I get. That's actually smart.
Right.
Because it helps things come out on time. I don't know how much on time this comic came out, but when you switch artists around, and all of these artists are supposed to be superstar artists.
Yeah, you have Daniel Acuna, you have Steve McNiven, Rod Reis.
Florentino and Lano Francis Yu.
Exactly. But sometimes the art is really muddy and like the characters aren't, they sort of blend into each other. Sometimes you don't even know who it is.
I don't know who's who sometimes. And we talked about this. It's like, I don't know outside of Steve McNiven if any of these artists were actually the best choice for this. That's not for me to say. I'm not Marvel editorial. I have never been a fan of Lano Francis Yu. I think I know he's a superstar. He was Civil War. He was, I don't get his art at all. Andrea Sorrentino is fantastic.
It is fabulous.
When it comes to more horror or introspective comics, I don't know that they fit with an event comic. Daniel Acuna's art has always felt rather plastic to me.
Yeah. There's certain panels in here where the dimensions seem off, like people's arms seem shorter and their heads are too big. I don't know. It just seems odd and off.
And this is you doing this issue.
Yes.
Not you, Paul.
You, why you? Yes.
And I understand that I've never been a fan of this artist. Lots of people do love him, and that's fine. I just, his art just is really weird to me. And so I don't understand the artistic choices with a lot of the artists that are on this. I don't know that they fit with an event comic. Steve McNiven, on the other hand, would have been perfect for every damn episode.
Well, yeah.
Steve McNiven is perfect.
I get that it's an event comic and you want to highlight all of your superstars. At the same time, having a consistency through it really works.
And don't get me wrong, Andrea Sorrentino's art is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's just not interpretable in terms of in the sheer amount of characters that they have to represent.
So I guess I just want to sum up. The art is not bad, but it's inconsistent. That being said, let's get to dinner with Ultron, where Cap, Ultron, Hank Pym, and Iron Man have a bitch fest with each other, and they lay out all their problems.
It's Thanksgiving dinner after the election.
Exactly. And I forget again which character says it. It's like, well, this is all pretty consistent with every family dinner I've ever had.
It's Scott Lang again.
Scott Lang is really good.
Scott Lang gets a lot of the good lines.
Yeah, so they talk about how people keep following Tony and Steve, or Ultron says this, Tony and Steve, and yet everything gets worse when you do that. And then Tony calls out Hank for smacking Janet.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is how bad, you know, this is when everything started to go wrong.
No, this whole dinner scene is just, this issue is so fantastic. This Ultron Hank Pym combo, he just absolutely excoriates everybody. And the fact he says at one point, I didn't have to beat you because you are beating yourselves.
Yeah, I just have to wait for you to destroy each other and I'll step in. And then they talk about, you know, wanting the cosmic cube and wanting to rewrite reality. And he points to Wanda and says, she tried to do that. How'd that work out?
Right. And he points to, no, this is in my notes. It's like, it's not just that. It's not just the no more mutants. He brings up the Civil War. And he brings up all of these, you know, sort of issues that, and this is so, as a DC guy who also loves Marvel, but has critiques of Marvel, it's like everything that Ultron Hank Pym says, I'm looking at going, yes, everything that he says has been my issue with Marvel all these years.
And you know full well
Ultron
that
has confirmed my bias. He's given me bias confirmation.
I love Marvel and I try to follow it as best I can, but crossovers kill me. Oh man, every time I get invested in a story, we have this ridiculous Civil War, Civil War II, No More Mutants, or somebody's on the moon and you have to go get him.
Original Sin.
Yeah, exactly. And although I did like Blood Hunt, full disclosure, everything Ultron says in this, I kind of agree with. So
yeah, I mean, he just absolutely eviscerates every aspect of, I can't believe Marvel let this 20 pages of Ultron shitting on Marvel exist. But yet,
you know what? Yeah, you know, it's Nick Spencer. Nick Spencer knows what he's doing. But in the end, Tony insults Ultron so much that he's about to kill everybody, and Scott Lang steps in. Scott Lang basically says, don't do this, Hank. You're my hero, not because of what you've done, but because you've screwed up so much and you keep moving on. And so it gives me hope that whenever I screw up, I can keep going.
And it ends with, you know, Scott Lang is like, what would Janet Van Dyne do?
Ultron ends up gifting the one shard of the cube to the cosmic questers and everybody leaves. But that's pretty much it. They will not get another.
Yeah.
Of the shards. The rest of the shards will be gotten by Steve Rogers and Hydra.
Because it ends, the issue ends with Namor bending the knee. And then we find out that Captain America has somebody on the inside.
Exactly. There's a mole in there. Also, we forgot to bring it up, but there's a little mini thing going on where Steve Rogers, a different Steve Rogers, is in this sort of dreamlike area.
I have a whole bunch of so throughout all these comics, and I don't think we need to address, we should address it now. We don't need to address it until the very end when it becomes more important. There's a long running dream sequence, and that's what I call it, a dream sequence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is very dreamlike. It is.
It's a different artist. Rob Reese, I think, is the, or Rob Rice, R-E-I-S, drawing those, and they're really pretty.
Yes, it has a very ethereal quality to it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's this whole sequence. It's only like a page and a half per issue. I call him Old Man Steve, or OMS, which I, you know, so who is wandering through this weird world. He doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know what's happening.
He has fragments of memories of who he is.
Fragments of memories, who's wandering through this weird world, discovering things each issue as he goes about this, that comes into much more important play later. But a lot of what's happening in these dream sequences, put that in the back of your head. Remember it.
It's basically an amnesiac original recipe Rogers.
That all gets resolved here in a few issues.
Exactly. So that just know that that's happening. So we move on. There's a lot more questing. There's a lot more emo-ery.
Captain America, yeah. Or Steve. I'm going to call him Steve Rogers. I'm not going to call. So Hydra Steve Rogers is Steve Rogers. Captain America is Captain America.
Yes.
Captain America is not Hydra. Steve Rogers is Hydra.
Yeah. And if you want to make it even more complicated, Sam Wilson is actually Captain America.
But Sam Wilson is actually, well, but he's resistant at this point.
Exactly.
Going on in the background is Black Widow is leading her team of teenagers to try to assassinate Steve Rogers.
Yes.
So this is going on. There's a whole bunch of intrigue. We can't cover all of that now.
Like I said, and we're not even covering what's happening in space. Right. There's a whole plot line happening in space. Chitauri attacking.
Right. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening in space, which is fun, but not necessarily necessary to our plot. But Captain America, Hydra Steve has started to like gather up way more cosmic cube shards.
Almost all of them, actually.
Almost all of them.
He begins to he subjugates Namor. He's trying to get the mutants. Led by, what's her
Emma
name?
Emma Frost.
Wow, couldn't remember her name for some reason. Went completely blank.
This is a great moment with Emma Frost. Like, I wasn't reading X-Men at all during this time, so I had no idea what New Tian was, or New Tian, or whatever. New Tian. But Emma Frost has that great line when confronted. She's like, the mutants will not kneel.
So she's basically taken over, and she's ruling from the shadows. So right. Someone else is standing in, you know, is the puppet leader, but she's ruling from the shadows, and she's being very strong. She is the White Queen.
Yeah.
We will not kneel.
We will not kneel. And this comes up in a really important way later.
So the next big thing, the big thing that happens is because there's somebody on the inside of the resistance, Hydra Steve knows where the secret base is and launches an attack against it. We find out that the person on the inside is Scott Lang because they have his daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's that moral question there is, so Scott Lang is protecting his daughter, and, you know, he's called out. He said, well, how many other people will die so that your daughter won't die?
And again,
that's an ethical moral question. That is Scott Lang wrong for protecting his daughter? Like, because that's his.
Right. Well, that gets into, is it okay to let one person die to save the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one? The needs of the one, sometimes, you know.
It's, yeah. You can't, like, how do you expect, you're a father, how do you, as a moral, ethical person, allow your child to die to save strangers?
Well, you also get into, there's a thing that Captain America has said, and Batman, I believe, where... if you save one person, you save everyone.
Right.
But you just save one person. You can't save the world until you start with one person. It's this moral quandary. It's actually quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a very interesting quandary that Scott Lang goes through. Scott Lang, to me, is like one of the most interesting characters in this entire comic. I think he has the most interesting story. I realize Steve Rogers technically has the most interesting storyline. But Scott Lang, to me, is like, I don't know if the Ant-Man movie was coming out at this time. Maybe it was. But he is utilized in a very interesting way throughout this entire series in a way that other characters are not.
Right. So that's what I was saying.
Redemption later is stinking amazing.
Exactly. He has an actual arc and is true to his character. As I said in the introduction, it's like a lot of the characters here do and say things because it's expedient to the plot. Whereas Scott Lang acts in a way that is consistent with his character and actually has an emotional arc throughout the entire thing. So there's an attack. So the mount, the hidden base is attacked. All seems lost, but they have a shield that's blocking the thing. There's only one way to get through, and that's Steve Rogers or Hydra Rogers
has a secret
weapon, which is Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner's dead at this point, but they resurrect him. Blah, blah, blah.
I want to get into that. This is a major quibble I have.
Okay. So tell me, what is your issue with the Hulk?
What the hell is this for? There's stuff that happens here that doesn't make sense. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense in this. I'm not addressing a lot of it because we just want to generically cover some of it. A lot of this comic is a whole lot of, I said this before, there's a ton of Deus Ex Machina that happens in this. We've already had a bunch of it. We're going to have more of it. And like a lot of the setup for the big things that happen are like these secret weapon sort of things that keep popping up. We'll talk about the narrator in a little bit because the narrator is actually a very interesting character, which we've referenced already, but we don't find out they're the narrator till later. So this is this is the instance that bothers me the most. Again, like every issue has to have this big secret thing that happens. And this is very much in keeping with event comics. I understand exactly that. So the idea is they're attacking this mountain that the resistance, but they have this shield that protects them from Thor and everybody else because Thor is part of Hydra. Again, a weird, we'll get to that maybe later. But
Tony built the shield to protect against the powers of every superpowered, ultra mega powered thing
that was currently alive.
Exactly. But not the Hulk because the Hulk is dead at this point.
Because the Hulk is dead again. So there's this long sequence in this comic and this one and the next one, Hydra Steve speechifying. My God, he speechifies constantly. There's so much speechifying. And I know that's Captain America's thing, but it's like, okay, we get it. He gives speeches. But it's like every issue is like a long Steve Rogers speech. It's a bit much. We get it. But there's this whole long sequence of Hydra Steve talking to Bruce Banner. Somehow they've gotten a hold of Bruce Banner. It's never explained because why would it be? You know, it's him trying to convince Bruce Banner to become Hulk to help him out, to help Hydra out. And Bruce Banner is having none of it. I love the fact that there are, at numerous times, people who are not buying into the Steve Rogers speech. Right. Bruce Banner's having none of it. So at some point, Hydra Steve just says, well, I'm not talking to you.
I kind of like that.
And then so Bruce Banner's eyes just turn green.
Right. So I like the fact that Steve Rogers wasn't speechifying to Bruce Banner. He was speechifying to the Hulk.
Right.
Who are, at this point is established that they are two separate entities. They're the same person, but different.
Right. And we get it. And that is consistent with whatever time this is happening, because sometimes it's different. And, the Al Ewing Hulk, we should talk about it sometime because that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's what this directly leads into that.
Yeah.
So,
oh, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Hulk. And then suddenly Bruce Banner's eyes turn green. And I love the fact that Bruce Banner is like, you're Hydra, go screw yourself.
Exactly. I like the fact that Bruce Banner says, even if, yes, people have been trying to shoot me in this space and trying to get rid of me for so long. But bottom line, I'm still an Avenger and I'm still going to do what's right. And I'm not going to buy into your garbage.
But it's also weird because what little I do know about all of this is there have been times when Bruce Banner has requested to be killed. So not all of this stuff that Steve Rogers, Hydra Steve, is bringing up is necessarily contrary to the character of Bruce Banner really just, wanting to, not be, period. So we get this, and then later, so during this attack, it's a very dramatic scene. They drop Hulk out of one of the planes, and everybody's losing their crap.
Because he can break through this.
Thing. So essentially they drop a Hulk bomb. He breaks through. So Hulk smashes, as Hulk does. And so then Hulk is in there. And of course we get a great Thing versus Hulk moment.
That's actually quite exciting.
Which are also fun, right?
That's one of those puncher the air moments when Thing finally says, finally, it's clobbering time.
And Hulk gets to do the smash and Thing gets to do the clobbering time. And it's a nerdgasm for all of us. But then Hulk comes in and he and Thing fight. And then Hydra invades. And there's this huge, gigantic fight scene. And, you know, everybody's, sometimes the good guys are winning, sometimes the bad guys are winning. At some point, Hulk just starts randomly smashing things as opposed to people.
He is being manipulated because he's been resurrected.
Right.
And he's being manipulated by Madame Hydra into doing this. That starts to wear off. And that's why he just starts, you know, lashing out.
I have to say, not all of this is completely clear.
No.
and so
you have to read it a couple of times. I did have to go back and forth. Yeah. And the end of this, it wasn't exactly clear to me until
the end of this is very unclear to me. I don't understand what exactly happened. Okay. And maybe you can clarify this to me, but let me finish.
Okay.
Hulk's just is smashing and Hydra's invading. And then suddenly in the Hydra thing, they're like, we're getting a weird energy signal. And then, you know, Madame Hydra rushes in, saves Steve. She sacrifices her life. The whole thing blows up in what looks like a nuclear explosion. The hell did that come from?
That came from Tony. So he says when he's having his, first of all, the little conversation between Tony and Steve, I like this because Tony Stark admits that all this stuff about Civil War,
right?
All the things he does. He said, I do it because I want to be like you.
Right. And then he apologizes. And there's this whole, it's all very emo.
You say emo. I like it. I think it's a vulnerable character moment for Tony Stark.
Right.
To admit his failings and to, you know, because he doesn't typically do that. So it was good. But he does that because he initiates what's called the clean slate protocol.
Yeah.
And he's going to blow himself up.
Okay.
Yeah.
See,
his AI goes somewhere else, but he blows up the suit. Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
It's not super clear.
It's not. It's not. There's a few moments in this throughout this comic where you kind of go, what the hell just happened?
Right. There's a nice scene where Thor allows the superheroes to evacuate the innocent people.
Yeah.
He's like, just go. And you start to see like the moral center of Thor starting to come through. The whole thing explodes,
and it's. I don't think it's meant to be nuclear. It does. It's drawn to look like it's a nuclear.
But
I think it's just a big ass bomb.
But then in the next issue, it's just like, this thing happened, and we never revisit that. Where the hell did Hulk go? We never see him again. Like he's. Weird.
It is. He's brought in for, you know, look, it's the Hulk.
I mean, it's a great idea. Dropping Hulk like a bomb is a great idea.
Yeah. But again, he's supposed to be dead. They resurrected him through mystical means and manipulated him. This thing blows up and he just goes back to being dead again because all that's gone.
There's no way the Hulk would be killed.
And he doesn't, and that's what leads to Immortal Hulk. So it's all good.
But that's it's suddenly he's off the table again. It's like he's just used as a bomb, and it's built up as this is a major important thing that is happening. We have the Hulk. The Hulk is the greatest weapon ever. And then he's gone.
Think of it this way. Tony counteracts that by having the clean slate protocol, blowing up everything and removes Hulk again.
But there's no way Hulk is in any way the Hulk.
I think you're overthinking this.
I am overthinking this, but it really bothered me because the Hulk is the one character in comics who could take out Superman, right? So an explosion of that magnitude, which wasn't that big a magnitude, even if it was nuclear, would not in any way, shape, or form, take out the Hulk.
No, and I think it just takes out Hydra's access to the Hulk now. That's all. Hulk's still around. We obviously there's still stories being told about the Hulk.
I feel like it's lazy.
Fair enough. It's a crossover. Crossovers are inherently lazy.
It's just building this up as like the great moment, and then it just fizzles.
I got nothing. It's just, it's how,
and there's a lot
how
of
things
this,
are.
There's a lot of this in this comic. Every single issue has these surprise moments.
Again, crossover event. That's why crossovers are incredibly frustrating.
I realize I'm very agitated about a thing that probably doesn't really matter, but to me, it's the one major bug up my ass.
it didn't bother me that much. I thought there was a couple of good moments in this issue, and it served its purpose. Moving on. So now we get into
dadgummit.
So now we get into issue 7, 8, 9. We're going to run up to the conclusion. So we finally get Black Widow and her. And Black Widow and Miles, basically, and her child Red Room people, they're finally in DC. They're going to assassinate Steve Rogers.
This is also an issue that I think is really good, along with issue 4. Issue 0, 4, and 7 are probably my favorites.
Yeah, this one's actually quite good.
This is a procedural. This is like an assassination, almost a heist.
And this is where we get another conversation between Miles and Black Widow, where he's really not okay with what he's going to have to do, but he's trying to come to grips with it. And Black Widow, in keeping with her character, says, yeah, no, you're not going to have to make that decision. So she locks him in a Hulk-proof truck, basically.
Right. This is a great scene. Like
it is. Yeah. And then she goes off to try to do the bad thing to do the assassination.
Because Miles Morales Spider-Man thinks he's the one that's supposed to kill Steve Rogers based on a vision that happened in a previous event that I have no knowledge of.
This was in Civil War II. There was an Inhuman called Ulysses who could see the future. It's because of these visions that the whole crossover happens.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's not that good.
But
it's
there is
it's fine.
To it based on the cosmic cube changing the visions, which we'll get to here in a minute.
Yeah. So, and then of course we never mentioned the Punisher's in this doing Punisher things.
That just seems really randomly.
It was just so the Punisher and Black Widow could have a fight.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Which is brilliantly rendered.
Oh, it's great. I love the fact that Natasha just, the way she counteracts him because he's just brute force.
And she shunts those knives into his.
Yeah, and she's new. Yeah, she's nuanced and moves like a dancer. It's really quite good.
That's one of the moments where I feel Andrea Sorrentino really shined in this.
Yes, I agree. So now we get to Miles does eventually get out, which is a kind of a cheat because.
Yeah, but it's funny. It is funny because it's him basically saying, "Well, we know from the prophecy I can get out," so he's like. Whatever I say as the password to get out will be the right password.
Which does in fact work.
Yes. And we never actually see the password, but that's actually funny.
It is funny. I mean, it's a very,
there is humor in this. Ultron wearing Kiss the Overlord, apron in the dinner scene earlier. But anyway, moving on.
It comes down to a confrontation between Miles and Steve Rogers, and Black Widow tries to intervene and get in the way of them. And Hydra Steve kills Black Widow.
Not on purpose. She just.
And he's trying to hit Miles with his shield, and she jumps in the way to try to protect him and gets killed in the process. This is interesting because we really get to see how strong Miles Morales is.
Right. Because he beats the living hell.
Yeah, he smashes his shield. He beats him to a bloody pulp. Yeah, and then drags him, just like in his vision, and he's about to impale him on this stone, sharp stone, as he's seen in his vision. But
some character I have no idea who
it's,
was.
It's
Nadia Wasp.
Nadia, who's Wasp. Nadia, who's the another cool. Black Widow. She's the White Widow, but she's Wasp now. but anyway, she comes in and acts as a conscience. It's actually kind of clever. It's like Tinkerbell conscience on his shoulder.
Right.
Neat.
But what is interesting is what they notice is the reason that... So Spider-Man, Miles Morales Spider-Man, decides not to kill Steve. But it is noted later that Steve had a piece... Hydra Steve had a piece of the cosmic cube on him when this happened.
Yeah. So even though it's not together... The shards can still to a limited amount change reality to a small amount. Yes,
right. And this is really, I mean, this is kind of like the big important part of all this is the understanding that even shards of the cosmic cube can act to change prophecy or expected results.
Yeah, to rewrite reality in a small way. I like this part where Tony Stark tests this theory because it's his birthday and he wishes for a cake and someone brings him a cake.
And he gets a cake.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
Yeah. And then you have a character say, did you waste your wish on a cake? Like, to be fair, it is a really tasty cake.
Right.
Which is, I mean, that's that humor. It's very fun.
But this is kind of like this whole end of this. Like, I love the procedural part of this. The whole setup and the way they set up. And this is where they bring that Mosaic character that I didn't know. It's all completely set up for Black Widow. It's such a great kind of 70s heist movie sort of thing going on.
And it ends with this all hope is lost kind of a thing because Black Widow's killed, the young Avengers basically are captured. Everything's in ruin.
And Miles Morales doesn't kill Captain America.
It's the all hope is lost moment until Sam Wilson steps up with shield in hand and with his red, white, and blue wings on, and he takes up the mantle of Captain America. Punch the air moment.
Then suddenly everybody is re-inspired again. Yeah. Every issue here has everybody getting re-inspired and then beaten down and then re-inspired and beaten down and re-inspired.
Well, you got to keep people coming back.
Well, you do.
So now we lead on to, okay, we're all just, this is it. This part I do not understand, but they send a time machine into the future, which will then send a message back at the right time.
Right. They send a time machine. I had to figure this out.
Yeah. So they build this time machine and they bury it in the ground for 100 years when they assume Hydra won't be around anymore. And then that time machine will then transmit a message from Sam Wilson.
Over time,
back to when they need to hear it.
Right. Like when they're still under the shield of the around the earth and around America United States of America.
It gives them hope again and whatever.
A speech. It's a Captain America speech.
And this is when Sam does say, I'm not good at this, but I'm Captain America, so I have to. It's a requirement. Anyway, the speech, it's a little convoluted. It's a convoluted way for all of the heroes in the different areas, because we haven't really been talking about space or the dark dimension in New York.
There's a lot of stuff going on there, but it's not...
Gets everyone on the same page and like, we're going to do this at this time. So there's an all-out attack from the heroes and the resistance. Doctor Strange comes up with a spell to get us out of the dark dimension with the help of Dagger's light. Rocket Raccoon has stolen the ultimate nullifier and is going to drop it on the shield. So all this is happening at one time.
And the idea is that Sam Wilson is going to go up with we have to talk about the one remaining cosmic cube that our heroes have and how they got it.
The piece of the cube.
The piece of the cube, the shard.
Right.
To me, this is one of my favorite parts. There's this character, Brian McAllister.
Yes.
Who has a great superpower. He can visualize or see a thing as long as it's not...
It has to be altruistic. It can't be like a gun or a weapon.
So this is a character introduced like in the first or second issue, or maybe even Zero, who has a brother. And he seems like a regular guy. But we find out... is that he can see these things or visualize these things. And how does he, and he can recreate them. How does he recreate them?
He pukes them up.
He pukes them up. And his code name, which you referred to earlier when you were talking about Tony Stark saying, well, to be honest, most of the good names are already taken. Right. His code name is Barf.
Yeah, and he says, I don't particularly care for that, but it's what they like to call me.
Right. And so the idea is that so they eventually find this guy, like when they free up.
There's a prison for all the Inhumans and they liberate that prison.
So the idea is like Tony Stark shows him a picture of the cosmic cube that they had that they lost and said, can you do this? And
barfs it up.
Barfs it up. So they have a fragment. And the idea is that the cosmic cube doesn't have to be complete. Right. They have discovered that, seen the fact that Hydra Steve had a cosmic cube on his fragment on his person when Spider-Man was supposed to kill Hydra Steve. And that fragment, while not all-powerful...
Did change reality to a certain extent. Right.
So this is the reason I think this is important is because what we're about to get to is when Sam Wilson flies up into the air with this recreated piece, which is where we're about to get to.
So they have a plan. That plan comes from the Winter Soldier is still alive and being hidden by Namor.
Right. Namor took the knee, but had other plans, and he had a secret. We've seen this throughout the series. He had a secret...
A
secret weapon following him around.
Well, it is the secret empire. Maybe that's what that means.
Well, in Marvel, everything is a secret. In DC, everything is a crisis.
There you go. So yeah, so what we get is, here we go. It's going to be the big old confrontation. Because at the same time, the heroes realize that even with a piece of the cube, they can rewrite reality.
Yes.
Hydra realizes that too. So they take the almost completed cube that they have and they create kind of an Iron Man armor and place the cube inside of it so that Hydra Steve now has this ultimate weapon armor and he can rewrite reality.
But before this, we have that whole issue 8 where it's like, this is the, what's the word for the penultimate?
The penultimate, yes.
We have the penultimate issue where Sam flies up with the shard to try to use it to manipulate the end of the shield that's keeping the the space heroes, Carol Danvers particularly, out. But the idea is, and then also to get rid of the Dark Force around New York City to unleash all the New York street heroes. And so Sam flies up, he does it, he gets shot and falls into the water.
All hope is lost again.
All hope is lost. The shield won't break because the nullifier that Rocket Raccoon got didn't work. Doctor Strange's spell that he sold his Sanctum Sanctorum for didn't work. So all is lost.
But then
Sam rises from the ocean and Quasar is suddenly not in a coma. Maria Hill comes in and assassinates
Blackout.
And so suddenly the shield is gone over the Earth. So the space folks can come in.
The dark dimension is released.
Blackout is dead. So New York is free.
Yes.
And suddenly every hero on the planet is converging.
And now Namor's armies can come out. And
Namor, who has been hiding Bucky Barnes, is bringing his people in.
The X-Men are coming. Yeah.
The X-Men are like, screw this shit. Here we come. Once again, Emma Frost is like, we will not kneel. And so there's this massive battle in Washington, D.C.
Also, we should keep in mind that ethereal Steve Rogers has now also suddenly found his hope, which is a vision of Sharon Carter. We haven't really talked about Sharon Carter, but it's not necessary.
He's kind of a badass in this.
Yeah, there's a ton we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about Dr. Faustus at all. There's stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
We're already going long.
Yes. So I just want to just point out that the ethereal Steve is now coming to understand where he is and realizing who Kopek is. So,
right. And eventually he encounters the child Kopek, who confesses to him that she's scared and she is regretful. And ethereal, we'll call him ethereal Steve, right? For the moment, is a product in her, I want to say mind, although it's cosmic.
Yeah, well, they say that it's her memory. It's her memory of the real Steve.
And so she finally allows ethereal Steve or memory Steve, she restores all his memories.
Right. So he is now fully, OG Steve Rogers.
Trapped within the Cosmic Cube construct.
So now we get into the final issue.
So here we go.
So it's a big old, so it's nothing but nonstop fighting at this point. We see things like Viv, Vision's daughter, removes the AI that's been blocking Vision. Thor changes sides because he can't take it anymore. Scarlet Witch has been possessed by C'thon, which is a demon.
Purges C'thon.
Yeah, exercises.
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch. So now she's back. And it's on and on and on. The superheroes are now regaining their forces.
Bucky Barnes and Black Panther overpower Zemo, who has a really weird relationship with Hydra.
There's a little bromance going on there.
Not important to the larger discussion, but I do like that we had to bring it up.
Emma Frost restates that she will not kneel.
Yes, and I love the fact that they revisited that, and she absolutely stands firm.
Yes, and then
Magneto fucks up the Hydra ship.
Yeah, all the helicarriers out there.
She had that great moment where she's like, thankfully, Magneto agrees. And you see this great, it's just a couple panels, but Magneto just walking in and using his powers destroy the main Hydra ship.
Yeah, pulling the helicarriers out of the sky. It's very cool. I like the fact that Taskmaster and Black Ants both just go, you know what? Let's just switch sides.
Right. And that's hilarious. That's a really funny scene. I like the fact that they include some humor in this. Because the Black Ant and Taskmaster scene when they free the Red Room teenagers is great.
We got Jane Foster being brought back. Everybody's getting back to their strength again. But in comes Iron Hydra Steve. With his cosmic cube powered Iron Man suit. And he does, in fact, rewrite reality to exactly the way he wants it to be.
He rewrites part of reality. Well, and this is where I got a little confused.
He rewrites it so that it's what he believes happened.
He rewrites part of it, but not all of it. Like when we get to issue 10, we understand, like, I don't want to get ahead of our skis, but there's another rewrite that happens that rewrites a longer history.
Yeah, so Hydra Steve puts it the way he believes it should be, but he can't do it completely because he doesn't have the full cube.
Yeah,
so he can, it has a certain, it doesn't have full power, basically. So we have this moment where
a bunch of the heroes disappear.
Yeah, so yeah, because of this rewriting, Hydra Steve is just making people go away. And Sam Wilson does bend the knee.
He bends the knee and he presents the last shard
of to Hydra Steve.
Most importantly, the shield. Because Hydra Cap doesn't have the shield. The shield.
That has been Sam Wilson. So just as an aside, at this time, there are two Captain Americas running. There's Captain America Sam Wilson, Captain America Steve Rogers. There are two series running at this time. But when Hydra Steve tries to put the shard with the rest of the Cosmic Cube, it disappears.
What?
Yeah. So it turns out, and I kind of like this.
Deus Ex Machina.
No. This was actually, so Bucky knew what to do. His plan was, Sam, you pretend to be going on to changing sides, bending the knee, and hand it over. But what we'll do is Scott shrinks them down to molecular size. They hide on that shield or on that shard. And when it's given over and put back together with the rest of the Cosmic Cube, Bucky is able to call out to Steve, ethereal Steve,
right,
and pull him back into reality.
And
pull him back into reality.
Yeah.
So now we have this portal opening up and OG Steve, real Captain America, steps out.
In Captain America Guard, he's no longer bearded old man Steve.
No, he is in full Captain America regalia in all his red, white, and blueness. And we get this big old fight between the two Captain Americas with the entire world watching.
Steve McNiven, it's so gorgeous.
Yeah, it does look good. It does look good.
Oh, Steve McNiven, we love you.
So there's this big fight and the whole world is watching because the revolution will be televised. Yeah, so we get this huge, huge fight and
And remember, before this, Kobe comes out and restores things to how it used to be.
To first. So real reality, yes. But yeah, but the major gist is you get Cap on Cap fighting. Hydra Steve tries to pick up Mjolnir as he's...
There's a great moment in the fight scene. I just want to, like, I think this is important. Hydra Steve throws the shield. He throws it at real Steve. Like, why would you ever separate the one thing? But he throws it to try to take down real Steve. And Steve easily just...
snaps it out of the air, caps it.
And then real Steve Rogers finally has back the shield.
Right.
So I mean, that's a big moment.
It really is. No, you're right. It is.
Sorry, I didn't want to gloss over that.
No, that's a big deal. He gets the shield. Hydra Steve tries to pick up Mjolnir, but can't because obviously he's unworthy. And real Steve can pick it up and uses it to knock him into oblivion.
Just absolutely knock the hell out of him. It's a great panel. It's a great two-page panel.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's a huge splash. But yeah, so everything is restored. And I kind of like the fact that they didn't just hit the reset button and everything's back to normal again. It sort of is, but the memory of the Hydra takeover is still there.
Right.
And it still happened, but certain aspects. So characters are back and, you know,
and we,
it's
we,
sort of a minor reset, but not complete. Like I
consequences of it in the Omega issue that involves a lot of speeches and talking. To me, one of the most important things is, like, throughout all this, there was a narrator. And the narrator, like, had a lot of, it wasn't always great. It was a lot of purple prose. It was a lot of, like, hopey, changey stuff.
Well, it's like, and now came the darkest hour when we didn't know.
I'm reading this, and I'm just like, who the hell is this? And I probably should have figured it out sooner.
Yes.
But at the end of this issue, issue 10, we find out who the narrator was.
And it was?
It was Brian McAllister. It was Barf. I love that. I love that this character, I don't know if they've carried on at all. I don't know if they've been used at all. But he has it's a great power. It's a gross power, but it's kind of a great power. Right. And his whole thing, Brian McAllister was protecting his brother, his little kid brother, Jason McAllister, throughout all of this. His whole point. But not only did he create the one thing that saved everybody, but we find out he was the one who was giving us the hopey changey narration throughout it all.
He was just puking up a storyline.
He was puking up some massive prose.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, it all comes around full circle because he does start it out as well. So
he was part of the beginning. And this is kind of one of the things I love about what Marvel does with events. And they've done this before. It's like when they have these big events, they sometimes have these spinoffs, which I don't love spinoffs. But they often do the man on the street or the person on the street sort of perspective. Some of that is like Civil War Journal. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And it was Ben Urich. I may be getting this wrong, but it was like a reporter just reporting from street level reporting of what's happening.
I remember that, yeah.
But they do this a lot with their big events, is they will have these sort of spin-offs that are like newspaper articles. And I feel like Brian McAllister became, for this event, that thing. When we find out he's the one that was talking about it all, Barf is the hero.
Yes, indeed. Real quick, let's just finish this off with the aftermath, the Omega issue. There's not much to say about that. It's just sort of ending. It's a denouement, however you want to say it. But there is a conversation between real Steve Rogers and Hydra Steve Rogers, which I found fascinating.
Which goes on forever.
Yeah, but the point, the Hydra Steve says, which is very fascinating, especially in today's political climate, is that I didn't force anybody to do anything.
Yeah, no.
Everything Hydra was Steve given to
isn't
me.
Isn't wrong.
He said, they gave everything to me.
Yep.
Real Steve does counter that with, they gave it to you because of what I did.
Yep.
It's because of what I did that they trusted you. Yeah. So it's, I just found that fascinating. The conversation between those two.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of exposition. And in the same way that I don't feel Ultron was wrong in a lot of what he said in issue 4, I don't necessarily think that Hydra Steve is wrong in some of his criticisms.
Not in the way that, you know, that he was given, he didn't take power, it was given to him.
Right.
But real Steve does point out that, yeah, but what you did with that power is horrendous.
Yes.
And they gave you that power because they thought you were going to be me, but you weren't. Yeah.
And it's tricky.
It is.
I think what is very interesting about this is it creates a tricky political and social sort of conversation we clearly have not properly discussed in current times.
Yeah. Remember, 2017 was pretty much predicting a lot of what's happening right now.
And remember, at the very end of this issue, a guard whispers in Hydra Steve's ear, "Hail Hydra."
Anywho, in hindsight, as I said in the beginning, I didn't like this on initial release. I don't think it's flawless. I don't think it's a classic, but it has its moments. And if I take my biases away, I can acknowledge that this is a decent story with a lot of good things in it.
I feel that this is a very intriguing story. I think it is compromised by some of the art. It is compromised by some of the characterization that demands that folks need to have a deeper history of recent Marvel comics. Like, not an overview of Marvel comics, but very recent Marvel comics that have compromised my ability to fully understand some characterization and the fact that I can't name half of the characters in this. And I think this could have been 5 or 6 issues rather than 10.
It's a crossover event, sir.
Crossover event, and, you know, that's how we roll.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the political intrigue portions of it were definitely vastly entertaining too. Obviously, I've enjoyed it because I had a lot to say.
Right.
But
it's not as bad as its reputation would
lead
you
as
to believe.
Yeah.
Not,
is this a fun read? Absolutely. Could it be shorter? Yes. Is it essential to the Marvel Universe? I have no idea. It seems like it's not currently, but I don't know.
No, it's still relevant, but a lot of it's been pushed aside, and, you know, probably rightfully so. It was an interesting experiment, let's say.
Yeah.
That's Secret Empire, everybody.
It is.
And we've gone on way too long, so we're just going to plow through. Brian, what are we doing next time?
Next time, we're going to have a classic. Or not something that might fall into infamous as well. We're going to read Shade the Changing Man.
Hooray!
We're not reading the Vertigo Peter Milligan Shade the Changing Man.
What?
We're going to read the original 8 issues of the Steve Ditko written and drawn series, Shade the Changing Man.
Well, it's definitely going to look good.
Yeah, well, yes, it will look good.
This will be interesting to talk about.
I would love to talk about the Peter Milligan Shade the Changing Man. I'm kind of like, let's go old school.
I don't think we've done a Ditko yet, so.
It's a weird comic.
It's a weird comic. Be prepared for controversial opinions.
Good times will abound.
Okay.
Shade the Changing Man, the Steve Ditko years.
Excellent. So that's next time on the Collected Edition. Please leave us a comment, listen to the end credits, and you'll get all the relevant information. Otherwise, thanks for listening, everybody, and hit us up on Blue Sky. We have our own dedicated Blue Sky account now, Collected Edition Podcast, or Collected Ed Pod. Just look us up. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.